Hello, you're about to listen to the Movie Mixtape with Dirk and Marcy. It's my pick this week, and we are continuing on with our How Have You Not Seen This mix. I have chosen 2006, The Prestige, directed by Christopher Nolan. Dirk has somehow never seen this movie, even though he owns it. Will we solve this mystery in this episode? Who knows? But sit back, relax, and enjoy the mix.
Let's get busy. Hello, Marcy Dale. How are you doing? Welcome.
I don't understand. Why is this happening? That has nothing to do with this movie. What is going on?
Oh, but it does. The few people from the UK that listen to this podcast will be like, oh, I can't believe he said that. It's so topical with the movie that they're going to discuss. So how are you, Marcy Dale?
I'm okay. I just started coughing right before we started recording. So get ready for that, listeners. Hope you're thrilled about that as I am.
I for one cannot wait for all the coughing.
Yeah, well, you know, it's even better when you're editing it. Let me just tell you. But how are you doing?
Yeah, I am abracadabra. Amazing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know where I was going with that, and I started it. Kind of had to finish it somehow. I'm pretty good. Mm-hmm. Welcome, everyone, to episode 30.
30, yeah.
The movie mixtape.
Yeah.
This is How Have You Not Seen This mixtape, and this is going to be Marcy's pick, which we'll get into later on. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, pretty good overall. Thanks for asking.
Mm-hmm. Did the movie throw you off? Because the music mixtape.
I think many things have thrown me off tonight before we got to this point. We've had a few shenanigans. But we're here now.
We can't go back. Yeah, I said we can't go back now. So this movie is a little bit of a doozy, so I'll let you slide so I can understand if that's what has thrown you off.
Yeah, what movie is it that we're doing?
So I have picked 2006, The Prestige, directed by Christopher Nolan, and we'll get a little bit more into some tricks happening in this movie, but I'm very excited to talk about it. But before we do, I mean, is there anything new and exciting going on in your life? I'm laughing because you're always like, no.
Do you know what? I've reflected on that. And mm-hmm. I've decided my life is exciting, Marcy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I shouldn't just be saying it's not exciting, because flipping Nora, do I do stuff all the time. I really do lots of things so often, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I did want to.
It's like you're trying to talk yourself into believing something.
I'm so exciting.
Yeah.
My life is filled nonstop, like I'm Vin Diesel in the Fast and the Furious. So
that's
it's
it.
Just I mean, I've never seen those films, but I can only imagine that's exactly what my life is like. Did want to take a step back into the past and talk about last episode where we kind of skirted over watching a new TV show and both had similar experiences where, well, I fell asleep whilst watching the first episode and then subsequently the whole entirety of the second episode. And you weren't so sure about it, but
yeah,
I was brave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought, if Frodo can carry that ring all the way up to Mordor, I can trust myself to be awake watching these TV shows. And I went back and watched the first two episodes and the third one. And I think you watched the third one, didn't you?
Yeah, so I actually hadn't seen the second one, though, either, because after the first one, I wasn't sure how I felt. So I watched the second one, and it got a little bit better for me. And then I watched the third one Friday night, and it's definitely my favorite episode so far. There's definitely a lot more happening. There's a couple characters I like. I'd say Oh, I can't think of his name, but he's like the ranger elf, kind of. He's like doing the investigating. He's pretty cool. And then I think her name's Nori, who's the one Heartfoot. She's pretty cool. She seems fun. Yeah. So making connections, trying to. I'm liking it, but I'm not getting like the, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever that I've seen a lot of people say. And I'm just like, is it me? So I don't know, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're skirting around it a little bit because last week we never mentioned the name of the show. So I'll say it now. Mm-hmm. Cobra Kai. That's what we're talking about. The new hit TV show. No, it's that one with the Lord of the Rings in it. What's it called? The Ring of Power.
The Rings of Power.
Rings plural. Of Power. There's more than one. You know, don't feel like...
because this is like when Sauron makes the rings for, you know, the elves, the men, etc.
I can't believe people are going to listen to this and not expect spoilers for the show. All right.
And now there you are. Most people watching it know about these other rings.
Well, that'll be the only spoiler we will drop. So apologies for that. I can't do anything about it now. It's out there. It's out there in the open. You probably didn't know anything about that. But now we have to deal with it and live with it. We won't talk about anything else, but I thought it's so beautiful, isn't it?
It is a really gorgeous show. But if your budget is $1 billion, I expect it to look that nice. So
yeah, I think
thank goodness it looks that nice.
It is so beautiful. I think I'm probably similar with you. I enjoyed it. First one I enjoyed, second one I enjoyed more, third one I enjoyed more again. So it is increasing in value for me.
Yeah.
I struggled to get the different storylines straight in my head, like what was happening in the first one a bit more. But I feel like I'm there now. I feel like I'm comfortable with who the characters are and what seems to be going on. Just waiting for that real big, like, emotional bullet or something that will capture me in a very deeply spiritual level, which hasn't happened yet.
I definitely haven't had that yet, but I've had moments of awe. So in the second episode, when Elrond goes to, I think it is Moria, and he goes to like the mines, and you get to see what it originally looked like. That was really cool. And then, so you've seen the third episode? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
No okay, spoilers, so when... Then. When Galadriel gets to like that island and then the other guy takes her to the one part of it. I thought that looked really cool. And like, so it is really beautiful, like you said. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just haven't had like that, like, oh, I'm totally invested into this plot and these characters. Like, you know, like something happens with Galadriel in the first episode where you're like, well, I know that's going to happen because I know she doesn't do this thing she's currently set to do right now. So, like, there's no emotional stake here. Why, like, why are people acting like this is the most emotional thing I've ever seen? And I'm like, but you know, she doesn't do that.
All right. But there are many ways. There are many ways to get to the same endpoint, aren't there? So I suppose, you know, she could have. Mm-hmm. You know, there are lots of options. I think the actor who plays Galadriel is amazing. How good is she?
Oh, yeah. She's really good. I think she's also captured a little bit of Cate Blanchett, I think, just to get some familiarity with other viewers. And that's really hard to do because Cate Blanchett is probably one of the greatest actors alive right now. And that's somebody that I feel like wouldn't be easy to, like, try to capture a little spark of that, but I think she's doing a really good job while also doing her own thing, because this is a side of Galadriel like we've really never seen before, like this battle ready Galadriel, and she's really cool and she really kicks butt, and I like her a lot. I'm having a hard time just being interested in what's going on, but it's definitely picking up a lot. Like this third episode there's definitely a lot more, and there were things where I was just like legitimately like, this isn't fair, I'm getting so angry at this, and like what you kind of want in a show.
Yeah.
And stuff. So we're getting there.
Yeah. And I think if you really like your Tolkien, then I think there's lots of stuff in there if you like your Tolkien. Now I will admit to barely dipping my toe into Tolkien and his and his books, but I've seen a lot of chatter amongst other people, and they're really kind of fathoming things out and trying to work out who certain people are, and they sort of do big reactions when different settings appear, and I'm like, I've got no idea what you're talking about. So I think you know, it's hitting that kind of fan itch So that's good. You know, they're kind of doing that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Staying, I don't know, people who had an expectation, I don't think that expectation has, I think the expectation has been met is what I mean to say, which is good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And oh. So
I think my big issue right now, I kind of wish they weren't out at the same time. So I'm also watching House of the Dragon, which is the Game of Thrones prequel. And I really had no desire to watch that because of how poorly Game of Thrones ended. And I was so pissed off. Mm. But there's a podcaster I really like. She's really smart. I really enjoy her. Her name's Joanna Robinson. And she was so excited about House of the Dragon that I was like, you know what? If she's going to talk about it every week, then I might as well watch it just so I can keep listening to what she's going to talk about. And you know what? It is a lot slower than Game of Thrones. But if you remember, like, season one of Game of Thrones is pretty slow.
Yeah.
Until you get to, like, the very end of it. But I think it's actually really, really good.
Interesting.
But there's more exciting stuff, I feel like, happening than that. But that's also where Lord of the Rings is more family friendly. I think anybody could watch it. You definitely can't do that with House of the Dragon. So I just wish maybe if they had some months in between them, but they're literally coming out the same week. Like, I think House of the Dragon just came out, like, started a week before Rings of Power. So really, like, we're on episode 3 of House of the Dragon. We're on episode 3 of Rings of Power.
I've not seen any of House of the Dragon, but it's got Matt Smith in. How's he doing?
Oh my gosh. So I, confession time, I find Matt Smith really creepy.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
I don't get, like, I get like he was a great Doctor Who and everything, but my Doctor Who is David Tennant. And I think David Tennant is a very handsome man, where Matt Smith, I just don't see that at all. But I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about him. And what's nice about House of the Dragon is so much is left open-ended. So you don't know if someone actually did a certain thing or said a certain thing. And his character on the show is actually becoming my favorite. And I actually think Matt Smith is the best part of the show. And I'm really shocked. But they give him a terrible... Speaking of Lord of the Rings, they give him this terrible Legolas wig to wear. And it looks so bad on him. It looks so horrible. But, I mean, at the same time, like, I don't find him attractive at all. So it's like, it doesn't bother me that much. But the wig was really, like, standout bad. And, but he's actually, I'm really, really liking him. And I'm really actually rooting for his character. And I am enjoying the show so much. I actually bought the book and I'm going to be reading it here pretty soon.
Well, Jill, I'm really proud of you for challenging yourself with that opinion there about Matt Smith. Well done. Matt Smith is probably my favorite of the recent Doctor Who's. I really like Matt Smith. And I get what you mean. He's not, you know, to go from David Tennant, who's classically handsome, to Matt Smith, who's not, let's say, he's not classically handsome. But he's certainly had the Doctor Who charisma. That was, you could see that if you were around him and he was a guy with a time traveling spaceship, how you would be interested in him and you'd be like, okay, take me on your ship, mate. You could see that.
Well, even going back to kind of on topic, so you've never watched The Crown, and we were talking a little bit about it last week.
Of course not. I've lived it, mate. I live it.
Okay. But he plays young Prince Philip in the first 2 seasons.
Correct.
And he was really good. And that too. And that was kind of when the tide started shifting for me, where I was like, oh, do I think Matt Smith's a good actor? And so, you know, maybe he is very charismatic too. Like, even if he is kind of like, so, all right, I'll be nice. But like Prince Philip and the character, he plays Prince Damon in House of the Dragon. Both are kind of like maybe not the best people ever, but they're charismatic enough where you're like, all right, I'm interested in this character. I'm going to want to see what else you do. So I think he's really good at that. I don't know how to describe it better, but I'm definitely now a Matt Smith acting fan. I wouldn't say looks fan, but I would say I'm on board with Matt Smith now.
Yeah, I think he's a good actor. I think he is a good actor. I think there's a danger with Doctor Who that you very much become engulfed by the character. And I am really, I guess, impressed is one word, but thankful is another word, that he was able to kind of move beyond that. Now, David Tennant was quite a well-known actor before he became Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Whereas Matt Smith, probably that was his first big role. And now, luckily, you know, like you said, he was in The Crown, he's in this. He had a terrible part in one of the Terminator films, but we don't talk about that, you know?
Who did he play in a Terminator movie?
I can't even remember which one it was. It was one of the really dreadful ones. It was so dreadful.
Is it the one with Emilia Clarke? Is that the one you're talking
about?
Oh,
God, it might be,
so
yeah.
We come full circle yet again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's interesting.
That is fantastic that we just did that, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, we didn't know the name of that Terminator film, and this is a movie podcast. That's, someone like Dark Genesis, okay. Maybe one of them.
I will never watch
Salvation.
It. I'm okay.
I don't know.
I got burned on Terminator Salvation with Christian Bale, who we're going to talk about here a little bit. That was a very disappointing Terminator movie for me. So I think, I don't know, since we have brought up Christian Bale, do you think it's time to start talking about the movie?
I think so.
So I'm so proud of this synopsis.
I love how you've just amused yourself just by thinking about doing the synopsis. I can't
wait. I had this idea when I knew I was picking the movie, but I already know what the outcome of it is going to be, but I don't care. So I'm going to start now if you're ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Every mediocre synopsis consists of three parts. The first part, false motivation. The podcaster watches a film. An example, 2006, The Prestige, directed by Christopher Nolan, starring Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale, which tells the story of competing magicians throughout many years in the 1800s. The film is exciting and prompts false hope of getting some type of synopsis completed. The second part is called procrastination, where it has been a couple days since you have watched the magician movie and still have not started on your synopsis. The third and final part is desperation. There are 15 minutes before you start recording, so you think of some loose plot points or quotable lines and stretchingly make a synopsis out of it, this leading to nothing about the film actually being said and your co-host being annoyed. That is my synopsis of The Prestige.
Beautiful. That may be your best yet. Uh-huh. And you know, and thankfully you've kept your tradition going of not once describing the movie, so thank you.
I mean, I did a little bit in the first part. That was it. But I knew from the beginning. So I've seen this movie so many times that I knew I wanted to do that famous beginning with Michael Caine where he goes over the different parts of the magic act, and I knew, like, oh, I could break this down into the synopsis, but I know I'm not going to talk about the movie at all. So to be nice, I will talk about the movie a little bit now. So this is the story of two up-and-coming magicians, Robert Angier and Alfred
Bolin.
Okay, there we go. So Hugh Jackman plays Robert, and Alfred is played by Christian Bale, and they're both really ambitious and young. And they seem very eager, but they seem like they're somewhat friends, but they don't really know a lot about each other. And then this terrible accident happens where, you know, Robert's wife is kind of the show person for a magic trick.
The magician's assistant.
Yeah, there we go. And Christian Bale's character is determined on tying the specific knot for her. He thinks she can get out of it. She's going to be dropped into a thing of water, and she has to get out of the knot. Well, unfortunately, he does the knot, and she can't get out of it, so she dies. So then this sparks this, like, basically competition, or I don't know what
feud?
You would, like, feud, yeah,
feud
between the two of them. This, like, lifelong feud where they just keep trying to one-up each other, but also get back at each other. And it leads on this crazy journey for both of them. And all of this, because I know we're going to talk about it, but all this crazy stuff happens. But one really cool thing about this movie is it is not in chronological order. So it starts off with you finding out that they really just don't like each other. And then it kind of goes back to the beginning and you see why or how everything starts. And then by the end of the movie, it's gotten to the point where it looks like Christian Bale has killed Hugh Jackman's character, and he's on trial now for the murder of said character. And then I'll leave it at that, but we'll get a little bit more into.
Well, yeah, it starts with finding out that Christian Bale. Yeah. So obviously this is a film that if you haven't watched it, we are going to spoil the.
Oh yeah.
We are going to spoil the bloody heck out of this. So if you haven't watched it, it is definitely streaming in the UK on Prime. Is it anywhere in the?
It's not streaming anywhere now, but sometimes it is. But it's definitely a movie that if you like any type of Christopher Nolan movie, or if you're just a fan of either of these actors, I'd say watch it. Let us spoil it for you, because even though it's been, what, 16 years, I still think it has a really good twist in this movie. There's a couple of different twists. Yeah, just watch the movie. That's my suggestion. So
I would concur. Yeah, you picked this for me to watch because you were shocked that I hadn't watched it.
Yeah, I have one really big question for you.
Okay.
Well, we'll start with one, and then it'll lead into... It kind of goes hand in hand, though. So how long have you owned this movie?
I don't know. How many years has it been out? 16 years?
It's been out for 16 years.
I don't know, 15? 15 years?
Wow. So why have you never watched this movie?
So, I've never watched this movie because I bought it in the glorious days, I think Blockbuster was still going. And what Blockbuster used to do was they used to sell you their used DVDs when they were done with them, you know. So you could pick them up real cheap. So we used to go in Blockbuster and buy a whole boatload of used DVDs. And I got the Prestige was in one. I think it was Blockbuster. Anyway, and then got them. They were sat by the TV. I went away for a weekend. I was married at the time. Went away for a weekend. My wife stayed at home. And when I got back, I was like, oh, yeah, did you do anything? She said, watch that Prestige movie. Dan came around. Dan's one of our friends, and he notoriously falls asleep in films. And I said, oh yeah, did you like it? No, it was dreadful. That's what she said. No, it was dreadful. And I think she said I didn't understand it. And I just never got another opportunity to watch it again. That was always in my head. And then I've challenged Kate, my wife, this week. I said, she said, oh, what are you watching? I said, The Prestige. Oh, I've not seen that. I said, you have seen that. And then I regaled her with the story. She's like, oh, I don't remember it. And then I was watching it then, just before we came on, just rewatching a few scenes. And she's like, oh, has it got Scarlett Johansson in it? I'm like, yeah, you've watched this film. No, I don't remember her being in it. It's got Hugh Jackman in it. Yeah. Oh, I'd like to watch this. You have watched it. You said it was rubbish. So that's why I've never watched it.
Okay. All right. I mean, you could have watched it by yourself sometime, but you know, whatever.
Do you know what? I could have, but we're a very kind of inclusive movie watching house, apart from stuff like Female Prisoner Scorpion, which I watched alone. Okay. We tend to try and watch things together. Tend to. Doesn't always work out that way.
There's just some things, like, so Dan and I, like, if I know he's absolutely going to have no interest in it, then I'll just watch it by myself, and vice versa. There's some, no offense, I'm so sorry, Dan will watch, like, the really bad Netflix movies where I'll come in the room and I'm like, oh, is this Red Notice? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, God. And I'll just turn around and I'll be like, I'm not wasting my time on that. But, you know, he's like, nicer than me, where he'll give most things a try and I won't. But there are a lot of things we like to just save together. Like, we're doing the Mission Impossible movies together.
Bump, bump, bump.
Now. Bump, and, bada. I don't know. So, like, for me, like, I was very excited. I didn't see this movie in theaters, but I saw it. I rented it, probably from a Blockbuster, whenever it first came out. But this was, like, a really weird year. Do you remember this year? There was, like, two Magician movies in one year. There was this, and then the Edward Norton, The Illusionist.
I was going to say, it's Edward Norton, but I couldn't remember the name of it.
So my mom really liked The Illusionist. I thought that movie was garbage. I'm sorry. But that movie's really boring. Really, really boring.
But I think my memory is getting confused because I was watching it expecting Ed Norton to turn up in it. Maybe that was why.
And then this comes out. And you know what? I really don't think... You know what? You know what that might be the crazy thing? I think this is actually my first Christopher Nolan movie because I had not seen Batman Begins until after The Dark Knight comes out. And I definitely hadn't seen Memento at the time either. And then I hadn't seen Insomnia, which was like another one of his movies that he did before this. I think this is my first Christopher Nolan movie. It just kind of dawned on me now. But this is my favorite Christopher Nolan movie. It's an interesting time because this is right before. So Batman Begins got really like good reception and everything. I think a lot of people really enjoyed it. I really liked that movie, but like I said, I don't think a lot of people saw it until after The Dark Knight came out. So this is right before. I know a lot of people that saw The Dark Knight before Batman Begins because of the Heath Ledger aspect of it all. Because he had just passed away. And I think that was like what was, I know that was the reason I saw The Dark Knight was because of Heath Ledger. And I, because of the same circle of people I'm in and whatever, that was like similar reasons. But what's interesting about this is right before he becomes this huge blockbuster director. And so I feel like he hasn't really made a movie. Like, I think you could maybe argue Dunkirk a little bit, like pulls it back a bit. It's not like a big spectacle, but it is at the same time. So this movie just is so different from everything else he's ever made. And I think that's why it's my favorite. And I didn't realize that it is my first Christopher Nolan until just now. But it's so different from everything else. But I also really love period pieces, which I know you don't. But I love that it can really just set you back to an era and a time. You know what I mean? And you feel like you're really there. You feel I don't know.
Yeah, it's not that I don't it's not that I don't like period pieces. I don't like the traditional period dramas. Pride and Prejudice is the main example. You know, I say that from a vantage point. I've never actually even seen that film, but I just use it as an example. Whereas stuff like this, which is more ground level, you know, if you say I don't like period pieces, you're going to say I don't like The Muppets Christmas Carol, when I do. I really do. Okay?
Oh my God.
I challenge you a little bit. I think that people go and see Batman Begins because they go and see Batman movies. So Batman Begins, I think lots of people did see it. And I think when after that film, I think you're right, he was kind of now a megastar. Do you not think after Batman Begins?
I think it's not until Dark Knight. And I think the same for Christian Bale. Like, they're like on the cusp of it at this time.
Christian Bale was already a megastar, mate.
Over in your country, but not here. You know what he was known for in this country at that time?
Yeah.
Do you want to know?
I use
the freaking dragon movie.
Well.
Reign of Fire.
You know, he's Patrick Bateman by this point.
Oh, yeah. But listen, that's more of like, that to me is like a
one
movie.
One of the greatest movies of all time.
No, I really don't like that movie that much. But I feel like that, to me, it's just like Fight Club, where it gets hyped, and then you finally see it, and you're like, is that what everyone is talking about? Okay, all right, whatever. But I feel like, no, like, I don't know. You don't understand. Like, there's a certain type of people that watch that type of movie, but the overbroad picture here in America, most people are not watching American Psycho, okay? So sure. Most people, like, will watch the Dragon movie, like I said. Or maybe they had seen Newsies. I don't know. Or Little Women from 1994 with Christian Bale in it. But he wasn't like the mega, mega star, I don't think, until, I think it really is The Dark Knight for both of them that I think just takes them both to this other level. And Batman Begins starts it. Yeah, definitely. But it's definitely The Dark Knight that just kicks it into high gear. So that it's right there. So it's just a really interesting time. And the fact that this comes out the year right after Batman Begins too is pretty interesting. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Well, I would ask you something because you sort of said, you know, this is your favorite Christopher Nolan film. And we've not even talked about this film yet. But I have seen sort of all the Batman movies, this now and Inception. I've not seen like Memento and Interstellar.
Oh, really?
No.
You've never seen Memento?
No. But like, I couldn't tell you, because I've really enjoyed all of those films. I really enjoyed all of those films. But what would you say is like sort of trademarks? Because I don't know if I can, or like, how do you know it's a Christopher Nolan movie, I suppose is what I'm asking, because this is a book that has been brought to life. The Batman story is a Batman story, albeit, you know, with his slant on it. Inception, yeah, I can see that, you know, that is a spectacle in of itself and how it's done. And we get a little bit of that in this film, in that, you know, in Inception, it's like dreams inside of a dream. And here we get a flashback inside of a flashback. You know, we get sort of like a dueling flashback of, starts with, is it Bale reads the diary first? Christian Bale's character gets Hugh Jackman's diary first when he's in prison. And then we later
there's a flashback.
Yeah. And then we later
He's reading the diary of him getting,
two dueling flashbacks, you know, delivered using the same sort of device of reading stolen diaries. But what would you say is, you said it's his least Christopher Nolan film. What does that mean?
Because it is a different... Well, I guess you could argue Dunkirk, though. Dunkirk is actually... So you've never seen Dunkirk, then?
No.
Okay, so Dunkirk, actually, I would say, is kind of similar to this, where there's different time jumps, and it's a movie from the past. It's not as old as The Prestige, but it's, like, in the 1940s and everything, and time is a big factor into it. So I would say those two would probably go hand in hand. But to say what I think Christopher Nolan is best known for, and it kind of ties into this movie, is he is a showman himself. He is all about the spectacle. But what's fun is seeing the progression of that. So it starts with Memento, very small. Well, he had a movie before that, but Memento is what really kicks off his career. Very small, low budget movie. You can tell when you're watching it, but it's a really crazy movie with some crazy twists in it. And the whole movie goes backwards. Mm-hmm. So it starts from the end and then goes to the beginning. Then he does Insomnia with Al Pacino and Robin Williams, which is a pretty good, decent movie that I don't think... I think that might be his least known movie. And then he does Batman Begins, where it's like this guy is getting a big budget from Warner Brothers to make the next Batman movie. And then he does this, and then he does The Dark Knight, and then that's, like I said, when everything explodes, and then it's Inception, then it's, like, another explosion. Dark Knight Rises, which, you know, you can say what it is about it, but it still made a ton of money and is another spectacle. Then we go to Interstellar. Like, that's what I mean. Like, he just has to keep, like, the magicians in this movie, like, just finding different ways to just one-up his previous trick or movie, if you want to call it that. That's why when he pulls it back a little bit for Dunkirk, it felt really different. And then he did Tenet during the pandemic, which is another huge spectacle movie. I've really enjoyed all of his movies, but he is, to me, I don't want to say Spielberg, but he reminds me so much of Spielberg, where he thinks the value of going to the theater is so important. He thinks that is how you experience movies, which I totally agree with. And he wants to make original stories, like, to the best of his abilities, like new original exciting stories. Because even his Batman franchise is very original compared to what we've had before, you know, and everything. And he wants you to be entertained. He is an entertainer. And that is the vibe I get from Christopher Nolan. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but
yeah, I would agree, definitely. From the things I've seen, he's an entertainer, for sure. I think what I was getting from this was I was getting a feeling of suspense, like an ability to create suspense,
that
which
is where I think the difference comes in. This kind of almost feels like not straight horror, but there's definitely thriller and suspense, which you get in Insomnia and Memento, which are like his first three movies.
Yeah, I think I think you get it in Inception as well. Do you not think?
But to me, Inception's a little bit more of a spectacle at the same time.
Most of the last, whatever, 90 minutes of Inception in the cinema, stood out of my seat trying to cling on for dear life because I was waiting to see what happens. And I think the difference between creating dread and suspense, he definitely creates suspense in that you want to see what's next rather than, oh God, don't show it to me. You really want to find out and you want to see what happens in the next scene or what have you. That's what I got from it. I haven't seen a lot of all of his stuff, but that's what I was thinking when I was watching it.
I had thought you had seen more than that. So I'm really like, that's because to me, Christopher Nolan is probably... Because we asked a question on our Instagram, and it was like, you know, who's your favorite modern director? And when I think of, like, modern director that is relatively new-ish, that is the first person I think of. That's the person I feel like everybody knows that name. Everybody knows those movies. And I just assumed, like, most people had seen all of his movies.
A child came into my life in 2014, and that is the reason I barely got to the cinema since then. I think I tend to watch most things on streaming. Tenants now on Prime, I'll probably see that at some point. But yeah, I do wish I'd seen more of them in the theatre. What do you want to go next? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I think one of my favourite things about this, and it makes it so rewatchable, are the performances. I'm going to go with the three main actors in this movie. So Hugh Jackman, Christian Bale, and then I would say Michael Caine. I really like Scarlett Johansson now, but there was a time in my life where I really couldn't stand her, and I absolutely cannot stand her in this movie.
She really... Oh my God, I love her. I love her in this film.
Really?
Yeah, and she's not somebody I automatically love in films. I really liked her in this. Really liked her.
Oh wow, that's interesting. I just think her accent gets on my nerves. So my one friend and I, we always make fun of it. We're always like, Freddie, and like we will say that randomly to each other.
I will tell you right now to your American face that her accent was quite convincing.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. And more sometimes more convincing than Bale's attempt at doing a kind of a street level Cockney accent from whenever it was pre dawn of
that's
electricity.
Interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Moving on from Scarlett Johansson, one person I do really love in this movie, and it's the first time I had ever seen her, is Rebecca Hall, and I really like that character, and she plays Sarah, who's Christian Bale's wife. This is definitely the first thing I'd ever seen her in. She did not have the career I was expecting her to have. Like, the most recent thing she was in was Godzilla versus King Kong. And she's in Iron Man 3 and things like that. But she is she's actually directing movies now, which is really cool. I really like her a lot. And I have the most sympathy for her in this movie. So I automatically just like her because I just feel so bad for her. I don't want to get into the twist just yet, but one of the best things about this movie on rewatches is really paying attention to the Bale performance and why he's acting certain ways in some scenes and why he's not in others. And it's always fun to me when you're like, oh, that's what that is. But I also think it's a really good Hugh Jackman performance. And Hugh Jackman does this really great thing where, especially the first time you watch this, you're so on his side for everything that happened with his wife. And then he gets to a point where you can't root for him anymore. And I think he goes from so good from being this charming, wonderful man to being like somebody like that might be the most sinister person in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to see him flip like that. And then to like even lose sight of why he originally was on the path that he's on too. But I actually think my favorite person in this movie is Michael Caine. And so I just love Michael Caine. Speaking of A Muppet Christmas Carol, I'm really sad. So Michael Caine has officially retired. He is in Tenet. But one of my favorite things, when Christopher Nolan, it's after Insomnia and he does Batman Begins, Christopher Nolan was like getting interviewed and they were asking him like, how do you make your movies? And he was like, well, the recipe to a good movie is, and he was da 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 da. And then the last thing he said was, and a little bit of Michael Caine. Hmm. So he always tried to have Michael Caine in his movies. But I think this is a very big role, and I think he's really good, and I think he's really funny. Like, jumping a little bit ahead, there is a character named Fallon in this movie, and Hugh Jackman and Michael Caine kidnap him, and he shoots a hole in this coffin that he's in, and you just hear Michael Caine go, well, saves me cutting you a bloody air hole. And it's just so funny to me. I just love Michael Caine so much. I'm really sad he's like not gonna be acting anymore, but I love that he is kind of, so we love like father figure issues in this movie, but he kind of is the father figure for both of these main characters in a way, especially the Hugh Jackman character, where he just wants his approval. He wants to be like, can you believe like Alfred did this to me, and are you going to be on my side? Like, because I think that's where you get, like, you agree, like, there's the sympathy for the Hugh Jackman character, because that's why Michael Caine sticks with him for as long as he does. You know, he feels so bad for what happened to him and everything, but you know, towards the end he does eventually kind of fill that in for the Christian Bale character. I won't get more into that now. But what do you think? Who's like your standout performance for this movie?
I mean, no, I'm not being flippant, but honestly, I really like Scarlett Johansson in it, and that I'm not trying to be contrary at all there. I really genuinely liked her in it, and Rebecca Hall, she was so good, really good, and just soft and gentle, and you could see at times broken. You know, as the story went on, I think that the main three their performances are quite similar in that they're quite aggressive performances. I don't know whether that's the film, but certainly Christian Bale as Alfred Borland, he feels like he's kind of barks a lot, Michael Caine tends to bark a lot, it took me a while to realize that Hugh Jackman was an Australian playing an Englishman pretending to be an American. And, you know, that's sometimes the accents can get a little muddy. But it's all this, this hinges on their performances, doesn't it? And you have to be into what they deliver. You have to be into this blood feud that has been created for this movie to be successful. And it's 100% successful. So, I mean, I was fully into it. fully into their performances. I think Michael Caine gets a lot of like the good lines, and I think there's like when he was talking, sort of lines that when you come back and you watch it again and you sort of really stick with you, like you said, like when he's talking about the box that we encounter later, which was Angier's special device to do his magic trick, and the judge is asking him, well, what's the trick, and he says, most disappointingly, it has no trick. It's real or something. And, you know, and then later on that, you know, that the weight of that becomes apparent. So I probably, yeah, Michael Caine, maybe we're agreeing with you. He's probably the better of the three.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I just want to say this now. So, and our boy David Bowie is in this movie. He plays Nikola Tesla, which is so much fun. I just want to say, I am pretty sure David Bowie is in this movie longer than he was The Hunger.
It's a very, again, it's a bit like The Hunger, though. It's quite an understated Bowie performance, isn't it? And is it, everybody's having the best time making up their own accents in this film. David Bowie does his own thing as Mr. Tesla, and definitely Hugh Jackman's accent moves around, but I think that's explained a bit by, I think there's some of that wonkiness that is perhaps intentional. So, but yeah, David Bowie, God bless you. God bless you, sir.
Yeah. Did you like him in the movie, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
I really liked him and Andy Serkis together, because I think Andy Serkis is a really underrated performer, because I think he's best known for like his caption work and his voice work, but when you get to see him in movies, I always think he's really good. I mean, he's got an accent in this movie, too. Maybe I think his accent work is always really good, though, too. But they were really fun together. Like, whenever he's like, "Does nothing better happen to this cat?" And like, I'm like, yes, I totally understand. Andy Serkis. Yeah. So it's a really fun cast. It's a lot of big people in it, you know. And I remember the first time watching it and just being like, David Bowie is in this movie. What is going on? Like, but I wasn't like upset. I just was like, that's really
how would you be crazy. Upset at David Bowie being in a film?
I just love that, though. Like, we've looked at his filmography and it's like, there's not much there, but it's like the most random assortment of things. But I think he's always really good when you do see him. But I just laughed because I was like, he is definitely in this. If I timed this, he is definitely in this movie longer than he was in The Hunger. And he's like maybe the sixth billed person, in The Prestige. But yeah, I think all of the performances are really good. I think it definitely comes back on a, like, especially like I said, the Bale performance is the most fun to go back and rewatch it because you pick up on things. Yeah, he's barking and loud some of the time. But there's a quieter side to it, too. And then you understand why. And you realize, like, that is why that is. So I guess we should talk a little bit about... why don't we just get into the twist, then? Because I think that really... I don't know. Maybe it'll help explain the movie better. But I think, like, the twist is the big thing. But I just wanted to know, like, did you guess the twist? Or did you catch on to the twist at all? I don't know if... Okay, well, I'll let you answer, and then I'll get into my answer for that.
I did get onto the twist. I was suspicious, and then there was one scene that cemented it for me a bit later on, and I was like, yeah, it's definitely that. I think because of the things they play around with, there's a very obvious something out of place with the character Fallon. You know, there's something obviously out of place about him. And then you start to think about it a little bit more. I didn't get everything, you know, when it comes to things like the final transboid man trick and what happened there. I didn't realize what was necessarily going on with that.
Yeah.
But I did have suspicions that Christian Bale was underneath the Fallon makeup.
Yeah,
but it was only when they had a little conversation that it became a bit more obvious.
So I just want to give some backstory to this. So where the rivalry really kicks off is Christian Bale comes up with this magic trick called the Transported Man. Is that what it's called? Yeah. I can't remember the official title of it. And Hugh Jackman is in the crowd. So what they do is, you think they I'll get into this a little bit later, but so they go to each other's shows in disguise and check out what the other one's up to. And when Hugh Jackman's character sees this magic trick that Christian Bale does, where he goes in one door, bounces the ball, and then another door opens, and there he is again, and he catches the ball, but you go to the original door, no one's there. And he's so blown away by it, and he just wants to figure it out so bad. How is he doing this, you know? And Michael Caine, from the beginning, says he uses a double. And what I love about this movie is me personally, I was in the Hugh Jackman shoes where I was like, that is far too simple to be the reason.
Yeah.
That cannot possibly be it. So I just kind of put that to the side, and you know from the beginning, like, that it is said, like, he uses a double. That's what it is. Like, you need to understand that that's what he's doing. So I was really shocked when it was like, oh my gosh. But I think the more shocking thing is the lengths. So Christian Bale ends up being a twin. He has an identical twin, and they both just live the same life, where half the time one is Alfred and then the other one is Fallon. And Fallon is basically just like his assistant and whatnot. The shocking thing is the things they do, where they don't get to live a whole life. They both live half a life, as they say it. Like Christian Bale's one character is married to Rebecca Hall, and then the other twin falls in love with Scarlett Johansson. It screws up the relationship for both of them, because they can never just be with the one person and just be themselves, because they have to split up the time and be each other from time to time. And then, like, just even, like, so Christian Bale does a bullet catch at one point, and it's Hugh Jackman that does it and screws up the trick and blows a couple of his fingers off. You see the brothers cut the other brother's fingers off. It's like the lengths they're willing to go for one magic trick is the shocking thing. It's like, you know, what cost are you doing this? And they do really lose a lot. So, you know, you really don't have sympathy for them. The sympathy comes in for, like I said, the Rebecca Hall character, who is Christian Bale's wife, who, unfortunately, when she figures it out, she can't process it, and she kills herself in the movie. And it's really, really sad, because you do know that the Christian Bale brother that loved her really did love her. He even says it, like, at the end of the movie. And when the other brother, you know, is being taken away to, like, be hanged for the murder, I guess we need to go over that too. So he just says, I'm sorry about Sarah. And I think he genuinely is, because I don't think they ever meant to drive her, but they don't ever, either one of them stops it, you know, and that's the really sad thing. And then there comes the shocking twist where, like I said, you originally root for Hugh Jackman's character, I would say, because you feel sympathy for him. And you want him to succeed because of this tragedy that's happened to him. But he goes on this path where he is so competitive with the Christian Bale character that he goes to Nikola Tesla and gets this machine built where he wants to do his own transported man trick. Well, the thing is, it does transport him, but it makes like a clone or a copy of him. So it's real magic where it will move him somewhere, and then the other one falls into... Stays. Yeah. Yeah. So he ends up killing all these clones of himself, but he never, you don't know what the fun thing is, not the fun thing, but the interesting thing is, you don't know by the end of the movie if that's the original character we've known this whole time. But I think the point of it is that man is so lost by that point, that isn't the original character we've met. And that is a completely different man. So whether it is the original or not, it definitely is not the person we've known from the beginning, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. But I think we do know. I think he's not the original, because it's a theme about sacrifice and self-sacrifice, when they both keep saying to each other, I've sacrificed this, you don't know what sacrifice is. And it's when they go and see the magician at the beginning, the Chinese magician, who does this trick where he makes a goldfish bowl full of water and a fish appear on the stage, and they're trying to work out how to do it. And Alfred, Christian Bale's character, figures it's because this magician is on all the time. He lives his gimmick, and he pretends to be this crippled, disabled man all the time whenever he's out and about, and he uses that hunched posture to be able to hide all the props in his gear. And Hugh Jackman's character can't believe that anybody would do that. It's inconceivable, but he says that Alfred spotted it straight away. And it's because he's been doing the same thing, right? He's been he's been living a dual life, and I think he says at one point, you know, self-sacrifice is the only way to get out of here. And so that's his plan, you know, is for one reason or other, he's from a young age, he's decided being a magician is the way to get out of it. And to do that, you know, they're going to hide the fact that they're twins because they've got this great magic trick. And so the sacrifice that Hugh Jackman makes is he kills himself every single time he goes into that because it's the clone that gets made and gets transported somewhere else. So the person that steps into the machine, he gets cloned, and that clone appears somewhere else. And so, and the person who steps into the machine dies every single time. He kills himself. So that's so he's killed himself 100 times. Is what he says. You don't. That's my sacrifice. That's what I got from it. Anyway.
Yeah, I just think also though, like it's just like his just. Yeah, just losing himself personally, like, I've completely changed as a human being. But I love that, so at the very end, like, he and Christian Bale have one, like, last showdown, and he just says to Christian Bale, like, I never knew if I was going to be the man in the box, or if I was going to be the man that was, like, the prestige. And that's where I get that, like, who is it, like, you know, that thought process, but then it's like, it really doesn't matter, because that is very much not the same person we started this movie with. You know, that is a very corrupted man who's just lost all sense of moral. When you're framing someone for murder to get the last laugh.
And stealing their child.
And stealing their child. Then you know you really have gone low. And that's what I love about the Michael Caine character. When he figures that out, he realizes, like, I'm done helping you. I'm going to go do the right thing and we're going to get...
I think that's the only reason you might feel a bit more for the Borden character is because he is the dad of the small girl and he gets taken away. Yeah. But that's, I agree with you 100%. Like, he is, I mean, I don't know what the correct phrase is, but he is not treating Sarah or Olivia well.
Yeah.
Is he?
Well, okay, this is how I have to explain it to myself when I watch this. So I look at this. So there's the twin Christian Bale brothers. I always call one the bad one and one the good one. So it just helps me. Where I feel like the competition and the rivalry and all the other extreme qualities comes from the bad one. And the other one is the good one, who is married to Sarah, has the child and everything. Also, though, he is guilty where he doesn't stop everything. You know, he lets his wife die. He lets it keep going. He lets his brother pursue these, like, ambitions that are gonna end everything for them. You know what I mean? And he doesn't stop it. You know, he is as guilty, but I feel like the other one is the one that is the one that is the actual rival of Hugh Jackman, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because he even says, like, at the end when he's getting pulled away, like I said, like when he's apologizing about Sarah, he's like, I shouldn't have, like, gone to that show. I'm sorry I went. You know, you told me not to. And I feel like his brother was, like, always probably like, don't go. Don't do this. You know what I mean? Because we see, like I said, this is one of the funniest things to me is when they start first, like, messing with each other, they go to each other's shows in disguises and they pull members from the audience. Now, I want to know, why are they not paying attention to who is getting picked?
Oh, God, why?
When they know these people are coming and they know they're wearing disguises. So, you know, like, I feel like whenever it's Christian Bale going and doing that to him, it's the, as I say, the bad brother. And then it's always, you know, Hugh Jackman's character, like, going, obviously. But I feel like it is specifically that brother that is antagonizing him. And keeping the rivalry going.
I feel that tracks. I feel that tracks, yeah. And it's the bad one who gets hung at the end, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and then what is nice is that, like, the actual father of this little girl gets to be with his little girl at the end of the movie.
I mean, that's nice.
I mean, there's one, like, it kind of, in a as sad and as, like, crazy as this movie is, it, in a way, kind of has, like, kind of a happy ending where he does get to be with his daughter. Again, and everything. But yeah, I just think this movie is so much fun. Like, even rewatching, I don't know how many times I've seen it, but I own it. I've watched it a bunch. And so I never get tired of it. I don't know.
Well, I was going, like, to say, so you've only not known the twist once. So, like, you've watched it more times knowing what's going on. And I've watched it twice. And even when I was watching it the first time and thinking, oh, I probably know where this is going, I was still really enjoying it. I don't think, sure, it's always nice to have a big twist sort of hit you in the face and you to be shocked. But I think the story is good enough, mm-hmm. and the way it's delivered with the different timelines, it's always a bit kind of disorientating, isn't it? That you're always trying to mm-hmm. figure out when is this happening, what's coming next. And yeah, I think when somebody says a film's got a twist, I don't know if you're like me, Marcy, but you know, my brain is already working. It's already going, mm-hmm. right, these are the 50 possible outcomes for this, okay. twist. So I don't like to know a film has a twist. That's one of the mm-hmm. things I said, like, I'm the same way.
Yeah.
It's a spoiler. If you tell me this mm-hmm. film is so good, it's got a great twist, don't say that. You've ruined it for me, because now I'm going to just be thinking about what that is all the way through the film.
No, I'm the same way too. And my mom does this thing where if I watch something with her, she'll be like, you'll never guess what happens. And one of the prime examples of that was we literally, this was years ago, but we had started Arrival and she literally said that to me. And I could not enjoy Arrival because I was thinking about it. And then I looked at her and I said, oh, it's this. And she got so pissed that I figured it out. And I said, well, you told me. So my little brain was like, click, 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 click. Oh, I think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you can't get mad at me because you set the trap and I went for it. So,
well, I was reading a letterbox review by a friend of ours called Anna Gould. And she said mm-hmm. the same thing. She said that even when you know the twist, it's still an incredible piece of cinema. And I think it is absolutely. Yeah. I think that... Well, you've watched it 15 times knowing what the twist was, and you enjoy it, right?
I think it's a really interesting, fun story. Also, like, you don't get a lot of... I know that, like, there were two magician movies in the same year, but you don't get a lot of movies pertaining to mm-hmm. something like this. And also, like, the time period. Like, you were saying, like, well, he decided he was going to be a magician. There really weren't careers back then. That's how you were going to make money, by being a showman. So, yeah, I can understand, like, why you would put so much on the line for that. But what I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I loved seeing him do his very basic magicianing. Like, you know, when he stood in front of people and he's just trying to get those rings, and he's doing it. He's doing it because he's a magician. But like, how many kids' parties could you go to and see a magician do exactly those same tricks, you know?
Yeah. But what I really enjoy about this, now it's not every time, but I pick up on something new most of the times I watched this. Like, it took me a while to realize that, like, Hugh Jackman was also pretending to be somebody he wasn't the whole time. I just thought, I'm not gonna lie, the first couple of times I watched it, I just thought when he showed up at the prison at the end with his daughter and had a British accent, I was like, oh, he doesn't want anyone to know he's alive, so he's got this fake mustache and a fake accent. And then when you watch it again and you realize when he's talking to his wife in the beginning, he's like, I don't want to embarrass my family, mm-hmm. so I use this name and blah, blah. And then you're like, oh, he's actually telling her the truth, mm-hmm. okay. And then also another one was, I don't know, I forget when I realized it, but I always really thought that Tesla did build a machine for Alfred. And then you realize, oh no, he just tricked him into going all the way to America.
Alfred absolutely sold him a dummy.
Yeah.
And just, absolutely pulled the wool over his eyes and pretended he had a machine from Tesla. So he went all the way to Colorado or wherever for about 5 months.
And I do love that, though. I just think, like, it is so good. And then, like, the diary thing, too, when they both get to those parts where it's like, yes, you have my diary. I wanted you to have my diary. Hope you're having fun reading this, you sucker. Like,
but I think that's why the sort of the Alfred Christian Bale character is so much more like Michael Caine, because they're just pragmatists. Both of them are very mm-hmm. pragmatic. Well, it's a double, isn't it? You know, it's the simplest mm-hmm. explanation.
They get it.
And the Christian Bale's character, he can see the simple explanations. And his mm-hmm. problem is he can't dress it up. He can't kind of be the big showman that Hugh Jackman can be. But he can see the trick and how it's done, which I like that. Yeah. He's like Michael Caine.
Yeah, and it just kind of makes you think, like, if what would have, like, triggered the whole thing, if that wouldn't have happened, I wonder, like, maybe they probably could have worked really well together where they could have figured out mm-hmm. how to do things, but they also both have that, like, me, it's all about me, mm-hmm. you know, type of thing. But I, you know, talking a little bit more about Michael Caine, too, since we have spoiled the movie now, the other line delivery that I really love from Michael Caine is, it's after Hugh Jackman's wife dies and they're at the funeral and he's trying to be really polite and make him feel better. And he talks about the story about the sailor that fell overboard, and he says he told him it was like going home. But by the end, when he realizes he's been tricked sort of by Hugh Jackman, and he can't believe like how low Hugh Jackman has gone, and he sees how Hugh Jackman has like drowned himself in these boxes every night while he's making a clone of himself with this transported man, he finally tells him the truth, and he said, like, it was agony, like, drowning. And that sense of comfort, I think, like, he heard him say that in the beginning. He's like, oh, well, at least it's a peaceful death for these. Yeah. And then, like, that gut punch where it's like, no, it's actually really terrible.
And we see
that. And your wife. Yeah. Yeah. Your wife died a really terrible way, too. And it's like, oh, wow. Like, oh, it's so good.
But that we see it, don't we? We see him dying, you know, in a not a pleasant way. He's not having a good time. He doesn't look like he's going home when he's drowning in those tanks.
Yeah.
Can I tell you one of the things I was thinking about when I was watching it, and I tend to think about magic in these terms, is so much like wrestling. Magic and wrestling are just they're just the twin brothers, if you like, of entertainment. They are the two Christian Bale characters, because their objective is exactly the same, and it's to convince you that something is happening when the reality is something else is happening, all for your entertainment. And I have a vested interest in wrestling, so I know a lot about wrestling, but so much of what I saw in the movie really reflected my experience in wrestling. That thing when we see the big trick, the transported man, and the first time that we see it, we don't even see it, do we? We see the start of the trick, and then what we see is we see a reaction to the trick, and there's this big kind of story point for the Angier's character, Hugh Jackman's character, is that it's about the reaction, it's about the audience's faces. You know, you should see their faces when that happens, and that's what wrestling is. It's not about almost what you do in the ring. It doesn't really matter so long as there's the reaction in the crowd. Something can go terribly wrong, but if there's a reaction, you don't care. It was a good night, and that really feels like what magic is as well, like wrestling and magic. So I kind of saw a lot of synergy in there, Marcy.
Oh, you know? That's pretty cool. Like, I'm glad you could make that connection, because, I mean, I watch wrestling, but I've never actually done it, so I can see what you mean by that.
And you definitely have wrestlers that live the gimmick. You know, like the Chinaman, you know, like Fallon, the fake twin, just living it 24/7, and you have wrestlers who have done that. And certainly back in the day when it was a bit like a bit like this with magic, and that people would actually go and see and be interested, the wrestlers would stay in character like anytime they were out in public. And if you were a masked wrestler in Mexico, you were keeping that mask on like whenever you know, nobody could know what your face looked like. And so that living the gimmick was like definitely reflected in this film with these magicians.
It definitely, like I said, you want to, I think just it's just natural to like want to root for a character or like them, but it's kind of like the trick itself. Once you like unravel like who these people really are, like when you unravel the trick, you're like, oh, okay, well,
but that's what they say, isn't it? And that's so true.
I know.
So true. And there's so many truisms in this. And I think it's the Christian Bale character when he says it to Sarah's nephew, like, no, don't tell anyone the secret, because that's the important thing. Nobody's impressed by the secret. They're impressed by what you can do with the secret, I think is I'm paraphrasing, but that is essentially it. And it's right, you know, like there's a time when he tells Sarah how he does the bullet catch, and she's like, oh,
yeah,
it's really obvious. And like, she's so not impressed at all by it. And I just think that's true. Like, if you explain something like magic and wrestling to someone and how it's done, they go, oh, it's easy, isn't it? Well, it's not easy, mate. I can see why you might think that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the no pun intended, but the magic of it is lost at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So is there anything else you want to talk about? Is there anything else that like stood out to you in this movie?
I think one of my favorite scenes was when the first time Angiers does his new transported man, but he does it with his body double, and he takes his so they find this drunken out of work actor who looks surprisingly like Hugh Jackman in a bar. And they get him to play his body double so he can do the trick. And there's a lovely moment, though, when they do it for the first time, and you can just see he's waiting So the real Hugh Jackman magician is under the stage, and he's not there. He's not the prestige, which is the final part of the trick. He's under the stage, mm-hmm. and he's waiting for the reaction, and then it comes, and he just revels in it, and he takes a bow underneath the stage. Mm-hmm. I thought it was beautiful. That was my favorite scene.
Yeah, and I love how that comes back to at the end where he is having his final conversation with Christian Bale. So Christian Bale, the bad brother, as I was saying earlier, he dies. He is tried for the murder of Hugh Jackman's character. And then the good Christian Bale is tipped off by Michael Caine on where he can find Hugh Jackman, and he shoots him, you know, because he's putting an end to it finally, and also getting revenge for his brother and ending his magic career also too, and also probably trying to attempt to take his daughter. And Hugh Jackman still isn't getting it, where he's like, well, how was one of you like always getting the limelight? How did that always make the other one feel? And Christian Bale's like, no, we would switch. Mm-hmm. That's what we did. We lived a double life. Like, we lived one life together, mm-hmm. and we would take turns. And that's how we made it work. So not, you wouldn't feel guilt or like, mm-hmm. you wouldn't feel jealousy, because every other night it was one of them, you know, as the prestige and the other one under the stage and things like that. And Hugh Jackman's, you can just kind of see like the, oh my gosh, like, you know, like it dawning on him, like how wrong he was this entire time. And I think like that's why this movie is so good though too. Like, they really are selling it. I think they're so good in this movie. Like, whether they're people you're rooting for or not, like, I just think you can really get behind. Kind of how we were talking about Matt Smith earlier. If you're going to give a really great performance, I'm going to get behind it, and I'm going to really enjoy whatever's going on.
Yeah, and I should come back to what I said before about the performances. I think they all played really well, men who are obsessed with something, and that inherently is a dreadful person. You know, somebody who is so obsessed to the point where there's a line when I think it's Olivia Scarlett Johansson says something to Hugh Jackman and say, you know, he killed your wife or something. And Hugh Jackman responds, I don't care about my wife. I want to know his secrets. And it's moved past that now. It's moved past like the original reason for the, the feud. You know, it's moved beyond that. And they've forgotten they've almost forgotten that bit. And it's only about getting one up on the other person. And so I don't think, it's really hard to like anyone. And that's probably more accurate. What I was thinking about their performances, it's really hard to like them, but they do a really good job of me not liking them. If anything, I'm always going to go for the character with the little girl. You know, I'm always going to go for that character if I had to.
But for me at this time too, this was such a treat so I wasn't very familiar with Christian Bale. Like I said, I had seen him in a couple of things. Like I said, I had not seen Batman Begins until after The Dark Knight. So I was like, wow, this guy really is really good. But at that time for Hugh Jackman, I mean, it was all Wolverine. You know, I think The Last Stand came out that year too, or the third X-Men movie or whatever. But I don't think he had ever been given the proper chance to like actually act. And this felt like the first time like somebody was like, I know you can do this. Go do it. And it was like, wow, Hugh Jackman is actually very good at this, like very, very good. And it's just interesting to see like their careers now, because they are both known for being superheroes. But, you know, there's so much more than that. And I know Christian Bale is definitely regarded more as a better actor. He's definitely been nominated and won an Oscar. Hugh Jackman's only been nominated once. I think there's talk of him getting nominated this year for a movie he is coming out. But you see some things with Hugh Jackman and you're like, man, you are really, really, really good at this. And I really love Hugh Jackman. I think it is really funny because he's always very charismatic and handsome and like sweet. So I like this too, where it's like, this is so different from everything else he does. And he's such a creep in it. And where Christian Bale can be this guy all the time. You've seen it a million times and he's always good at it. But you know, for Goody Two Shoes, Hugh Jackman to do something like this, I love it. Like, not afraid to get your hands dirty. Somebody even says that to him in the movie.
They do.
Yeah.
And I think it's got connections to our last film, Mission Impossible, in that film and this film had people who really liked putting on disguises.
Some of them are pretty good. It took me a while to really look at Fallon and be like, okay, I see it. And they definitely put Christian Bale in that makeup.
Yeah, he's definitely
that guy is a chameleon. He loves doing things
it
like
was
that.
More yeah. It's more the fact that he just wasn't saying anything. And he just was like, who is he? Why? Yeah. He's in it. What? He's obviously a big part in it. Why? Yeah. You know, and everything.
If Alfred is so full of secrets, why is he randomly trusting this this guy? Like, you know, why is he investing so much? And it's like, even like how I said, it's fun to go back and watch things. So when like the good Alfred goes to see Olivia one time and she's like, leave your family at home, whatever, you know, whatever. And she's like, Fallon's been outside all day. Why is that? And you're like, oh, because it's the one that likes her and he's been watched, you know, and you're like, okay. So that's what I mean. It's so much fun to go back and pick up on things. Like, it doesn't matter that you know what happens
at the end of it.
I think it's just always a really cool, entertaining movie.
Because that was just a lucky guess. You know what I mean? You don't know that's the thing that's going to happen to you. Well, I don't think you really know 100%. Well, I didn't, even though I had it in my head. But yes, I would say I really enjoyed this film.
Oh, cool. I'm really happy to hear that. I'm glad you finally watched it. No, you still didn't watch it on the DVD you own, so bless your DVD.
Well, who knows where that is, because we have moved out since then, so it's probably stuck somewhere between some cracks.
Oh, I have it on DVD still, too. I'd like to get an upgrade at some point, but I did watch it on my DVD this week. But I thank you for watching it. So, I don't know, so you've seen Inception, the Batman movies, and this. That's it for Christopher Nolan,
I think,
right?
So. I was having a look at other things he'd done. I think they're the main ones, yeah.
So if you just had to, like, pick, like, where would this fall in your Christopher Nolan movies?
Well, to be fair, out of the films I've seen of his, I've liked pretty much every single one of them a lot. The Dark Knight, I did like The Dark Knight. I mean, not The Dark Knight. Dark Knight Rises. I liked it enough, but I would probably say, I don't know, I really love Inception, but I've only seen it the one time. I just had such an amazing experience in the cinema watching that. I haven't watched it again. I'd say it's up there. It's probably not quite, okay. I probably didn't enjoy it quite as much as Inception, but I think when I watched it again, I still loved it. You know, I hadn't lost anything when I watched it that second time.
Yeah. Well, I know how much you love 1917. And I kind of feel like 1917 took a bit from Dunkirk. And like I said, if I would pair this with anything, I would say Dunkirk. I'd say definitely give Dunkirk a watch. Yeah. Because that was one, at that point, I really don't, I think it's just okay. I'm not the biggest Interstellar fan. We saw it and we were just like, okay. Like, it was just okay.
I know some people who really love that film. And through various conversations, I feel like maybe I've kind of gleaned what some of the emotional bullets are from that. So that's, and it's also 2.5 hours long. So trying to fit that in when you feel like I probably know what's coming. I haven't sat down with that.
Yeah. But, so that kind of like turned me away for a little bit. And we didn't go see Dunkirk in a theater. And I kick myself now for it because it was like, oh, You knew he could pull this off. You knew he could pull this off. And I really love Dunkirk. Dunkirk is fun and it is time jumping. Oh, so it's okay. Like this. And it's like some people are like a couple days ahead. Some people are a couple hours ahead. I don't know how to explain it. You just have to watch the movie and then you'll get it. And then you know what? Like, it's not amazing. It's not like it makes my like brain scramble the most, but Tenet is fun and I had fun seeing Tenet in a theater. I don't like watching it at home, but when we went and saw it multiple times because there was nothing out during the pandemic, and you know what, Robert Pattinson is absolutely amazing in Tenet, and if you like him, I would just say watch it for that. But Tenet is fun. I will say that at least he is making original movies. Yeah. And that's really, really cool, and I'm so thankful for it. And next summer he has a new movie, Oppenheimer, and Cillian Murphy is going to be the lead. So Florence Pugh's in it too. So I'm very excited for that. I will, you know, probably more than likely always try to go to a theater for a Christopher Nolan movie, especially after not seeing Dunkirk and realizing the mistake I had made not going to see that.
Well, I think this has been a real positive shared experience. Thank you. I had a really good time, and you made me watch it. But shall we move, go on, what are you gonna say?
I just can't believe you've owned it this long.
Oh, it's very easy to believe, don't worry. That is incredibly easy to believe. Okay. Shall we move on to our song choices? This is a segment of the show that we've added. We added in, I think, at the start of the, was it the remix mixtape? Thanks to an email from Ron, who is now a host of the podcast Real Latinos, R-E-E-L. And you know what? This podcast is about that whole feel of when you had a new friend or someone coming into your life that you were getting to know and you wanted to share with them a part of you, and you would make them an awesome mixtape. And we wanted to create that vibe with the movies that we love between me and Marcy. And so Ron said, well, why don't you pick songs as well? And that's what we've been doing since then. You're looking very sheepish.
Sometimes you have weeks where you completely forget to do this, and then like 2 minutes before you start recording, you pick a song. So I'm just going to go first because that's where I'm at this week. Mm-hmm. But I actually kind of had this in the back of my mind, but I was like, I don't know if it really works, but then I just had to make it work. So I am picking a song by my beloved Riz Ahmed, and the song is called Karma. Mm-hmm. And I think it just fits the tone of like, that's karma, that's what you get.
Well, I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of bad karma in this film, for sure. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I went back and listened to Ratatat, that song that you picked for the last one. Loved it. Good choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good choice. That's my favorite album from them. Yeah. I love Ratatat. Yeah.
Well,
go ahead. Tell me your well thought out song and make me feel like crap now.
This is incredibly well thought out. I mean, I don't even really want to just blow my own trumpet, but I think you'll be blowing it for me after you find out. Well, I don't know if that works, actually. That's a weird euphemism. This film is about magic, right?
Yes.
It's got David Bowie in, right?
Mm-hmm.
What about the song Dance Magic by David Bowie?
Oh, my God.
From Labyrinth.
There you go.
There we go. There we go. I feel like I really nailed it there this week.
Yeah. I mean, that's way better than for a hot second of desperation earlier in the week, I was like, what about that abracadabra song?
Hey, do you know what abracadabra? Do you know that about the names of the characters in this film?
Yeah, they spell out abra.
Abra, and that's his final words as well, isn't it?
Oh, that Christopher Nolan, that wily Christopher.
Well, I presume. Well, I presume that was in the book. That their names for that. I don't know. I've not read the book, but it's a cute thing.
Yeah, but that feels like a little Christopher Nolan nod, though. Too like,
well,
so,
give him credit without checking. Fair enough, Martin. Fair enough.
I've never read the book. I actually heard the book isn't that good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's why I've never checked it out. But who knows?
Well, look, if you have read the book and want to tell us all about it, why don't you email in to us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com or join us over at the_moviemixtape on Instagram, where you can see the beautiful Mikey P episode art. Which Marcy, how do you feel about the Mikey P episode art this week?
Well, one, it's always the best feeling in the world when I get to see it before you. But two, as I was saying last week, once I saw it, because I had a couple different things on the table for this. Once I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, I just have to pick this now because, like, I really love the artwork, and I don't know, there's little details. It's like every time you look at it, it's like watching the movie again. You catch something new in the artwork, and you're like, oh, yeah, he did that, and he added that, and oh, and then it's, like, fun. Like, I don't know, I think you saw it after you watched the movie, right? You didn't see it
before. Yeah, that's right, I think, for fear of spoilers.
Okay, but it's just, it's like, that's really cool, and you get the tone of the movie, I think,
100%.
The picture that Mikey it's beautiful. Made. So, the way thank you, Mikey.
Yeah, the way it captures the film, it pops, absolutely crackles with electricity. Thank you, Mikey P. But yeah, do that. Why don't you email us? That would be so wonderful. We would do a little jig. I would maybe get a violin out and Marcy would get off of her seat and start jigging around a room as we read out your email at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. So there we go. Yeah.
So do you want to tell them what's coming up next, or should I? Because I kind of made the decision.
Well, so it's hard when you're doing a mixtape called Why Haven't You Seen This? And you have to pick a movie that you both haven't seen when we've established movies. Marcy's seen every single movie in the world, mostly. But we did it.
Mm-hmm.
We came up with one, didn't we?
Yeah, I think you had me look through a bunch of different things. And we have selected 1973's The Sting, starring Paul Newman and Robert Redford. And it's a movie I've been wanting to watch for a very long time now. And I think you were just nice enough to agree to it, so...
Absolutely not. I've wanted to watch it for a while as well. I feel this is a hole in my wagon that I need to patch up. I think this is a cultural cul-de-sac that I need to walk down.
Okay.
Okay? I'm very excited. I'm very excited to watch this. Okay? So that's going to be...
Okay.
And I feel it is a film big enough to fulfill the criteria of how have you not seen this? I think it's
a Best Picture winner.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's, of course it
so
is.
So it fulfills the criteria. So we did it, guys. Mm-hmm. So it's streaming on Netflix over in the UK. Is it on anywhere in the Americas? It's,
of course, not streaming anywhere over here. So good luck, everybody.
Right. But before we go, I'll leave you with this from Arthur C. Clarke, which I feel sums up this movie perfectly. Any significantly advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
I guess I have to say it. Suck on that, you suckers.
Shazam!
Tape is a podcast hosted by Dirk and Marcy, mixed and edited by me. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Find us on Instagram at the_movie mixtape and catch new episodes on Wednesdays. Thanks for listening. Bye!